Good afternoon and welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina, week before Thanksgiving. And it's still smoky up here in the upstate. Boy, I tell you, we have had a time with the fires. But like I said, you're listening to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz, and you're tuned in to 94.5 WGTK, The Answer. Hope everyone is set and ready. The menu's planned for Thanksgiving Day. And yeah, I actually saw some people were already deep frying turkeys because they were having company parties and all this past week. And man, just got my mouth to water, and I cannot wait for Thanksgiving. One of my favorite times of the year. And please, no Christmas music, no Christmas decorations before the turkey is eaten on Thursday. And that's just something I like to say every year. Nobody pays attention to it. But anyway, you're actually listening to a recorded version of me because I'm off. I took a little bit of time. I'm going to go deer hunting this weekend. Going to go up to Lake Wylie and be a part of Riley's Catch. Evidently the lake waters are down so much that they've closed a lot of the boat ramps, so they're not going to be able to have the Riley's Cup tournament on today or the Pros versus Joe's tournament that I was going to fish in tomorrow, which is really sad. But, you know, it's Rod does a great job with that organization, and it's just been a streak of bad luck. He had the hurricane year before last, the torrential rains last year, made him postpone it to November. Then this year with the water levels, we all need to pray that next year he has the perfect weekend, great weather, plenty of water, lots of big fish. But he does a great job, and his heart for those kids and getting them involved in fishing is just tremendous. Not going to have a calendar this week because we've got a couple of great interviews. We're going to talk to Mike Dillon from Richard Childress Racing about the upcoming striped bass fall brawl. And Mike's not looking for people to enter the tournament. I mean, it's too late this year. You can get involved in it next year when he has it. But they've got some great events for family, for kids that he's going to talk about. And then kind of out of the blue, got an opportunity to talk to Davey Height. Davey's been a fixture in bass fishing since the early 90s. In the South Carolina National Guard, came out of nowhere to win an Angler of the Year, an FLW Cup, a Classic, and another Angler of the Year title. And so we're going to talk to him later on the show about his career, about current, you know, what he's got going on, what he's going to be doing, because he's really landed in a great spot. And, but, you know, it's that time of the year in deer season. We're in mid-November, you know, early season's gone. Leaves are turning. It's a great time to be in the woods. But if you're like me, the deer just sometimes just seem to up and disappear. And you wonder, well, they were here last week. They were here 2 weeks ago, and now you don't see any. And frankly, you know, if I can make one more trip to the processor this year, I'll probably quit hunting and find something else to do during those cold mornings when I'd normally be sitting in the deer stand. But this was a good article. It was put out by Quality Deer Management Association. And it's deer sightability versus deer density. And it's a little bit of a play on words, but bear with me. You know, how many times do we get asked, how many deer did you see? You know, it's your response, well, the deer herd is either up or down in my area. You know, deer densities increases. Do we always see more deer, or do you always see fewer deer as it decreases? The answer, obviously, no. But let's talk about it for a second. Deer density is regulated by reproduction, recruitment, and survival. In the deer world, habitat quality governs these parameters and plays a large role in the number of deer an area can support. That's your herd. You know, healthy habitats, adequate nutrition permit, you know, fawns to survive, recruitment and survival. Survival requires adequate food, cover, protection from predators, coyotes primarily. Forested cover can provide protection from four-legged predators, and restrictions on the number, age, or sex of animals available for harvest can provide protection from two-legged predators, hunters. In a nutshell, high-quality habitats can support higher numbers of healthy deer, while poor and or degraded habitats support fewer or less healthy animals. Deer sightability is regulated by habitat type, food sources, and their availability, hunting techniques, stand versus still hunting versus driving, deer behavior, weather, you know, temp, and of course it's been dry here, precipitation, and deer density. Sightability in open habitats can be deceiving. Even though you can see further and should therefore be able to see more deer, deer spend less time in open environments, particularly after being exposed to human pressure, like 3 months into a deer season. Food sources affect deer movement and therefore directly influence sightability. Deer need to eat and are very good at finding the most palatable and nutritious food sources in their home range. Therefore, areas with little or low quality food typically have low sight abilities, even if the deer density in the area is high. Areas with abundant food often have higher sight abilities until human pressure causes deer to become less active during daylight hours, where even low density herds can have high sight abilities in feeding areas. Hunting techniques play a far larger role in deer sight ability than many realize. Other than rutting activity, deer during autumn are content with a daily cycle of bedding, feeding, etc. This maximizes their weight gain for the upcoming winter and minimizes exposure to predators. Unless hunters physically move deer, like in a deer drive, deer waste little time roaming aimlessly around or in areas with low quality food. Adult deer were masters at evading predators, and they immediately alter their behavior and change their movement patterns at the sight, sound, or smell of a predator. They're adept at hiding in cover, and, you know, then they go that nocturnal thing that drives us all nuts. So think about how easy it is to view a deer a week before deer season, how that changes after the season starts. The majority of modern-day hunters hunt from ground or tree stands and attempt to become invisible in the woods. Some hunters still drive deer, but the technique is vanishing. The difference on deer movement and sightability between these techniques is profound. Today's woods have fewer hunters, and those hunters move less. These add up to fewer deer being moved around and low sightability. For example, you know, 10 hunters drive an area, 8 hunters sit in a tree stand. You know, you're probably going to see more with a driven deer. Weather patterns affect, you know, sightability by influencing deer and hunter movements. So, you know, it's a lot of things. So the deer, you know, the final variable is deer density. High densities can have low or high sight abilities depending on your terrain. So don't think they've disappeared. It's just a factor of food, cover, how much pressure you put on them, and the type of land you're in. So I always thought it, you know, they disappeared at Thanksgiving. Not always. Hang on through the break. We'll be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side. Talk about luck and drawing bumper music. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. And if you can't drive 55, then, you know, we're actually talking to a gentleman that fits that just right. And that is Mike Dillon with Richard Childress Racing. Mike, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. You guys, I guess the only time you guys are driving below 55 is when you come on the pit lane, right?
Well, I believe in following all the proper road signs and staying within the law. I just want all the local trollmen and everything out there to know that. But, yeah, we do run fast in the right areas.
In the right areas. Yeah, in the control situations.
Yes, yes. Okay. I've gotten some driving awards in the past, and I've figured out that that's not good.
Yeah, awards that your mom and dad really don't want you to have.
That's right.
That's right. Well, like I do with all my guests, take just a minute or so and tell us who you are, and of course, you're with Richard Childress Racing, and just a little bit about you.
Well, I'm the Vice President of Competition here at Richard Childress Racing. We've got, Austin Dillon, my son, driving a 3-car, Ryan Newman, Paul Menard, driving our Cup cars, and then we have our Xfinity race teams. We've got 4 Xfinity race teams, and my other son, Ty, drives the 3-car there. Brandon Jones, Brendan Gone, and so we have all of our race teams that are in Paul Menard and Austin drive another car over there also. So we got all that going on, about 527 employees here at RCR, and we're going to Homestead this weekend to go racing.
Oh, boy.
But I'm also an avid outdoorsman.
Yes, sir.
Love to hunt and fish, and really have gotten into fishing in the last 4 years. Was more of a hunter before, then I got a buddy of mine took me striped bass fishing, and I caught my first striper, and when that happened, I have spent a lot of money since, and I really love it, and it's just like I never thought I would really become that big of a fisherman, but I really loved to fish for stripers, and it became a passion. So then we've grown it into this fishing tournament we got.
Why have you had so much fun striped bass fishing? Is it the people? Is it the fish? What is it about it?
I think it's the you never know what you're going to get. That's the one thing, the excitement of that. I think it's just like hunting. You know, when you go out in the woods and you go out and you find a location and you mark where deer have been working or scrapes, and you're able to set up a stand and you actually can make it happen and harvest a deer that way. You know, same way with fishing. There's a little bit of work to it, and you got to have a skill to be able to go out and locate the fish where they're at the time. The water temperature's big deal, and get your bait. Just the whole process of it. It's a lot of fun. Now, I'm not a big one. I don't want to cast all day and throw stuff. I'm a little lazier. So it fits my style a little bit. I like the trolling part, sitting back, and then you're just waiting on that big attack, the hit, and then hopefully you got a big fish on the other end. And it's just, but then going back to the people are the same kind of people that I think any of your outdoorsmen and people that this is the kind of people I like to hang out with, you know. Yeah. The same way with racing and everything else, just good, solid people, trustworthy, enjoy the outdoors and what God's give us to enjoy in life.
Absolutely. And we were talking earlier that, you know, one of your goals in all of this and what we're going to talk about is to get kids back outdoors and on the water and in the woods and away from the computers. And that's pretty much the whole purpose for this radio show. But you got something coming up Friday, December the 9th, down in Anderson, South Carolina. It's a pretty big deal because, I mean, you've got Bass Pro Shops, you've got Costa, Bad Boy Buggy, Realtree as sponsors. It's the Fall Brawl.
Yes, sir. I went to a fishing tournament, and I guess some guys call them tailgate tournaments. It was a really good tournament. My first experience in a tournament was Mark Crawford, who was from South Carolina, who put on, and enjoyed it. And I was riding back with my buddy, David Club, and I said, man, I think we could do a little bit with this. I said, these kind of folks are all about everything we do, and our sponsors, they're customer. So we got to talking about it a little bit, and honestly gave Johnny Morris a call, and he said, yeah, I'd like to help you with that. So We got it rolling, and decided that we just didn't need to have a fishing tournament. We needed to do something with this format. So we got hooked up with Feeding America, which is an organization across the country that helps folks in need to make sure they got a good meal on the table. And a lot of people that your neighbors are struggling to get food on the table, and you don't even realize it. And we have a guy here at the race shop who started Pit Stops for Hope, and that's exactly what he's done, and done an incredible job with it. That's how I've come across the Feeding America. So they've hooked us up with the Golden Harvest Food Bank down there in Anderson, and that's who, you know, we're our goal is everything is trying to raise as much food as we can for the event. Last year was our first event. Our goal was to raise 5,000 pounds of food. We ended up raising almost 22,000 pounds of food, and about $8,000 in donations. So I think close somewhere around 46,000 meals were provided off of a bunch of guys and gals and kids that wanted to fish and enjoy it. They had a great tournament. They were able to win some money in the tournament.
Right.
And then turn around, though, but the most importantly, we were able to help some folks out and get the food bank stocked up, and it was a big event for the food bank. So this year we're trying it again. We got some other sponsors. There's Duke's Mayonnaise has got on board to help us out with some stuff, and we got a lot of food coming, and you know, we're really looking forward to this. And then we've even gone further with it. We're not getting these kids outside.
Right.
We're trying to get these kids back outside and get them introduced to fishing. It's the cheapest way to go out and entertain, have some entertainment and have fun and enjoy what God's give us to enjoy out there, you know, fishing and then hunting. And, you know, we've got to do it the safe way. Everything's got to be done safe.
Sure.
Safety's first. But man, we got to get them back outside and get them off all these electronic devices and stuff like that. I'm not saying those are bad, but the amount of time that's being spent on that, we got to you know, get outside and smell the fresh air.
That's it. Well, we'll get to the, because you got a kids youth fishing event going on, but with the food donations to Golden Harvest, it's actually a kind of a little fishing tournament in its own, because you got some cash prizes for people that bring out the most food.
Well, what we do is our we have a lot of our sponsors that you see on the Striped Bass Challenge website that are donating product. And what we do, we got coolers, sunglasses, all kinds, and some really nice packages. That and a raffle ticket is 10 pounds of food.
Okay.
So Friday on the 9th is the expo, where we'll have, there'll be displays, there'll be boat dealers there, all kinds of stuff for folks to come out and enjoy at the Civic Center there in Anderson.
Okay.
And they can bring for one ticket, or they can bring 100 pounds of food and get 10 tickets. We had guys bring 1,000 pounds of food.
Oh, wow.
And they get hundreds of tickets. And it's for anybody.
Okay.
All the competitors will bring their boats full of food. We're really wanting to get the local folks in the area to come out and enjoy the expo. We're going to have some seminars on cast net throwing and some other things going on there during the day. And Hummingbird's going to be there doing seminars on their equipment, and just a lot of fun stuff going on. It's that'll be from 11 to 3 o'clock for the public, and then we'll start the drawings after that. We'll have our captain's meeting, and the drawing will start. But it's a lot of fun. And then on the 9th, on the 10th, the actual day of the fishing tournament, we'll in the same area there at the Chris Taylor Memorial Park, we'll have a youth fishing event where kids can come out. We'll have stuff for them, fishing rods and all that, for them to come out and fish and have help and try to get them introduced to fishing, and maybe we'll get us some more outdoorsmen.
There you go. Do you know how many boats you got in this thing this year?
We got 122 entries.
Okay.
We open it and close it at a certain time,
right,
so we can actually try to make plans. We may have been able to get more people to come and sign up later, but it's really wanting to be able to manage it right and put on a good show for everybody that's involved.
You know, every event you go to has sponsor banners here and this sponsor and that's. What does a sponsor do? I don't know that I've ever gone into this question, but you would know, being in the racing business and now getting into fishing. What does a sponsor do for the Striped Bass Challenge?
Well, I mean, just to give you a great example, the Bass Pro Shop, you know, that's our primary sponsor. They, you know, obviously everybody, I would dare say everybody that's in this tournament or even going to come to the expo been to a Bass Pro Shop.
Okay.
So that's their customer, for one.
Right.
So that's Bass Pro Shop giving back to support what these guys love to do and showing that, hey, I care about you being our customer, and we want to support you and what you enjoy to do. And then with the money that they would give towards sponsorship of an event like this, it helps you to just get everything set up. It helps you to guarantee a purse.
Okay.
That which then therefore creates a draw. You know, obviously if a guy can go online, or a group or a fishing team can go online and say, hey, we're guaranteed this is first place money, and then the rest of everything else that comes in all goes back to the rest of the field, or the next, you know, positions that you're paying out. It just helps you to create and do it all. I mean, it's I have been very blessed and very fortunate to have some good sponsors, but it takes a lot more to do it. I thought it was going to be pretty easy last year, and I realized pretty quick that it takes a lot to do it. And I tell you, the best group of people to ever work with so far, and I've only done it in one state, and I really, right now, another state would have a hard time catching up, but the South Carolina DNR, they're incredible. They really care about the environment. They really care about their sportsmen, and they're just unbelievable how they help and go above and beyond to be a part of it and make this happen. I mean, it would be nothing, nowhere near as the quality of event without those folks. They bring out their trailer and kids can come out and see and talk to these guys, and they teach everybody, you know, what's going on with the environment. Help us take care of the fish the proper way and put them back, return them back into the water. We had a great first year event where, you know, you're going to lose a fish or two here and there, but I mean, man, the mort rate was really, really low, and we do really stress that to try to put the fish back so other people can catch these fish because they're just beautiful animals. Those guys are awesome, and then Green Pond out there, they've been incredible help. And Anderson, it's just everybody down there is just has welcomed us, and it's a lot of fun to be able to do this with all these folks helping. It's a really pleasant surprise to be able to get the input from these folks or help.
And if you're out there listening, of course, registration is closed for this year, but they do have a Youth Angler Award in the tournament. They have a Lady Angler of the Tournament Award. So if you're out there, you like the striper fish, you didn't know anything about this year, you can look forward to next year. Get your wife involved, get your girlfriend involved, get your daughter, get your son. It's a great family event. Fishing always has been and always will be. So the expo is December the 9th at the Civic Center, 11 to 3. Bring food for entry. Then you got the kids fishing tournament on the 10th there at the park, and you can bring some food there, and it all benefits Golden Harvest Food Bank. Mike Dillon, I appreciate you doing this for me, and I look forward to seeing you down there either Friday or Saturday, and I hope that you have a great tournament, great turnout, and this is the second year of what will be many years to come.
Well, I really appreciate you having us on, and maybe we can come back and get on here before the event again. And just want to thank everybody in the area. And if we can get we want to welcome everybody in the area to come out and be a part of it on Friday and Saturday also at the weigh-in. So Saturday evening at the weigh-in around 4:30, they'll see some big fish coming out at Green Pond out there.
Very good. Mike, take care of yourself, and we will get back together and do this again.
Thank you so much. Yes, I appreciate you guys.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. You know, I remember when my next guest broke onto the fishing stage in a huge way back when I was really into bass fishing. And he has been such a great representative for South Carolina. It's just been incredible watching his career. And he's got some big news, but I want to welcome Davey Height to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Before he says a word, I want to thank him for his service. He was in the South Carolina National Guard. And he also has a son who is an Army Ranger, is currently deployed to Afghanistan. Davey, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Thank you so much. Glad to be with you this morning.
Yes, sir. And you're coming to us from your back porch in Saluda, right?
Well, I actually live in 96.
Now,
fairly in Greenwood County, but I've got a cabin right on the Saluda River, which is only about a mile from my house, and I do spend a lot of time there. My wife and I were over there yesterday afternoon, but just sitting here in the den looking out at the pond, a little fog coming up off the pond this morning. Makes me want to maybe go see if I can catch one.
I guess when it's in your blood, it's in your blood, isn't it?
Well, yeah. You can't do anything about it.
You know, I could run through the litany, and we'll get into some of the things you've done. What is one thing you'd like for people to know about you that maybe everybody doesn't know?
Geez. Well, that's a
loaded question.
It's a loaded question in a way, and I'm trying to think of a short answer. I guess the biggest thing I'd like people to know is, you know, I just was a guy, a young kid that had a dream and, you know, didn't have the nicest bass boat in the world to start fishing out of when I was a kid. You know, I basically learned a lot of early on, especially in a flat bottom 14-foot aluminum John boat and, you know, on Lake Murray and just just had that dream and kept pursuing it, and married a great woman that saw that I had a dream, and she actually had more confidence in me than I had in myself. And long story short, here I am, you know, just finished my 23rd year fishing the Bassmaster Permit Trail and accomplished more than I ever dreamed of, and about to transition into something great.
Yep.
So just a kid that had a dream, and everybody should pursue their dreams in life.
You know, I've read and I've watched some video of you, and when you're talking about it, and you talk about how much fishing has impacted your life, tell us a little bit about where it all started in the early years.
Well, it absolutely started for me on Lake Murray when I was 11 years old. My parents had divorced when I was about 5 years old, and long story short, my grandparents had retired from the Columbia area and moved up in a small little 1,000 square foot retirement home, and didn't expect to have a grandkid staying with them. But
right.
But my grandparents raised me from the time I was 11 years old on, and they lived on Lake Murray. And I spent, sometimes it might only be 1 hour, sometimes it might be 18 hours, but at least 320, 340 days a year on the water when I was 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. And like I said, I might come in the back door, lay my books down, and walk out the front door and go out in the John boat for 30 minutes. But every day, basically, I was on the water, Lake Murray, you know, fishing for catfish, fishing for crappie, fishing for bass, striper, what have you. Always, you know, just always out there. And I learned, that's certainly where, you know, I learned most of what I know about fishing.
And it had to have been a great upbringing, you know, young like that, and I grew up almost the same way. I had a little farm pond. I didn't have Lake Murray, but I was down there as much as I could. You know, when I was too young, Mom said you had to stay on the bank. I could see you from the house. And I got a little older. She let me go around the other side of the pond. But, you know, growing up that way, you learn so much, not only about fishing, but you learn a lot of life lessons too.
You do. And like I mentioned, I wasn't always bass fishing. I could be fishing for something else, but
yeah.
You know, I ran trot lines, that sort of thing, to catch catfish, and I would catch shad to bait the trot line with, and learning where those shad were
yeah.
at certain times of the year, all throughout the year. You know, simple things like that you learn at a young age, where the shad are, where the bass are a lot of times, too. So in its own way, you know, every moment spent on the water certainly helps you in some way or the other to be a better fisherman. Now, this day and time with the internet and with, you know, social media and with, you know, so much, you can learn a lot without being on the water. I don't think it's still quite as good as being on the water, but there are a lot of good young fishermen that don't get to spend as much time on the water as I did, and they can learn so much, you know, on their computer or on their iPhone.
That's because they're watching guys like you.
Well, guys like me are certainly more available than ever before.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really created a buzz in the high school and college fishing ranks. And, you know, there's a lot of good young fishermen out there. And I certainly am happy to see that. I think it's good for the sport.
Yeah, it is. Boy, I tell you, the high school fishing has just exploded over the last couple of years.
It really has. It's incredible. It really is.
Well, you had, back in the late 90s, you just had a bang, bang, bang section of your professional fishing career. You won the first Angler of the Year title. And for those of you listening out there that don't know, take just a minute and explain what it takes to win Angler of the Year.
I won my first Angler of the Year title in 97. What it takes to win that is obviously you got to have a lot of things go right. And I don't want to take all the credit because, you know, fishing is just part of it. You got to rely on your equipment, you know, a lower unit go out, blow an engine, anything like that. Cost you not making it into a weigh-in. There's a lot that goes on. So when you're able to win one of those titles, you realize all the things that come into play. You know, I've been running an Evinrude outboard my whole career, and to trust them, those engines, and win a couple Angler of the Years, a classic, those sort of things, is so important. But I would say what gave me the momentum to start that stretch that you're talking about, I finished second in the 1996 Bassmaster Classic.
That's right.
And, you know, I was the last guy to weigh in. And back in those days, the last guy that weighed in was always the winner because they staged it that way.
Right.
And, I was the last guy to weigh in, and I didn't quite win. I didn't quite have enough. I certainly felt like the guys that were looking at my fish had big-eyed them a little bit, but when I kept telling them they were big-eyeing them, thinking that I had more weight than I actually had, and they kept telling me they weren't, so I wanted to believe them. I promise you, I wanted to believe them. But it turns out that I finished second, and it did two things. I mean, it was like somebody sticking a knife in my chest. It really was to be that close to winning a world championship, and knowing that you might not ever have this chance again. But it gave me, in those days, the Classic was the final event of the year.
Right.
So it gave me the off season, a few months to realize that, hey, you know, if you really bear down, you can accomplish some things even greater than you ever thought, greater than you ever dreamed of. And that really gave me the confidence, that second place finish, which almost nobody remembers but me and my wife and my oldest son. My youngest son wasn't even quite born yet. My wife was 8.5 months pregnant with him, and she almost had him in the Coliseum when I almost was. But, you know, almost nobody remembers that second place finish, but it really did spark some great things. The very next year, 97, I won the BASS Angler Year, and absolutely the greatest thing I'd ever done in the sport at that point. The very next year, 98, I won the Forestwood Cup.
Yep.
And the year after that, I did seal the deal in the Classic and won a Classic in 99. So that was a few good years there. I had a few more, you know, off and on over
right.
the next 10 or 15 years, but that was a stretch of a couple of really good years for sure.
You know, you mentioned Evan Rude and how important your equipment is. You know, in the Forestwood Cup in 98, day one, you had four fish and your boat broke down. I'm sure that's probably not the way you wanted to start that tournament.
No, it did, but, you know, I was running a really long way.
Right.
And I did have some troubles in that tournament. And
it happens, I suppose.
I hitched a ride with somebody in on that first day. They got me going. It wasn't a big deal. They got me going the next day, was able to win that tournament. But I'll never forget the guy that gave me that ride. And I told him, I didn't know the first, I knew I had a decent stringer for the first day, but I didn't know how good, but I knew it was real important to get him weighed in.
Sure.
And he gave me a ride, and I told him one day I'll pay you back for this. And sure enough, it was only a few years later, we were fishing on the Mississippi River.
Okay.
Way south of that same area, but on the Mississippi, but south of there, and the river was flooded, and this was before Google Earth. I had studied maps and found me a pond that I thought was flooded, and I worked my way in through the woods and got to, it was basically a private pond that had gotten flooded because the Mississippi was so high.
Okay.
And I found it in practice and had a really good, you know, couple hours of practice in there, and I thought I had a good chance to win the tournament. So the first day of the tournament, I worked my way back through, literally through the pine trees and that sort of thing. And I get back to that pond, and there's the gentleman that gave me a ride that day in the Forestwood Cup, and I eased up about a cast away from him. I turned my engine off. I said, I guess this is where you're fishing today. He said, yep. I said, well, I always told you I'd pay you back for that ride in the Forestwood Cup. I'm out of here. You can have it. So, and I
wow.
left, and he didn't win a tournament, but he finished second or third, and I had a terrible tournament because I didn't have a backup plan.
Oh, no.
You know, what goes around comes around.
That's an incredible story. The 99 Classic, Louisiana Delta. So you won the Forestwood Cup on the Mississippi River up in Moline, Illinois. And then the next
yeah.
year, you're down in Louisiana Delta on the other end of the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
And yeah. so that's been a good river for you, hasn't it?
It sure has. It sure is. The mighty Mississippi.
One of the stories I read is that in that you were in practice and you came in this area and you saw a lot of 3 to 5 pound bass, but they were all floating. They're all dead, but yet you stayed in there. Why? What was behind the decision to stay in that area?
Well, in those days, we had a 10-day pre-fish period for the Bassmaster Classic, and it was usually about 3 to 4 weeks before the tournament itself. So you'd go scout out the water, and you say, man, that's a lot of time. But the Mississippi is a very big, big place, especially down around the Louisiana Delta.
Right.
So I spent a week scouting out the Mississippi River down in the New Orleans Delta area, and I found one area that had some really good fish. And you know, every classic I've fished, I've certainly wanted to win.
Sure.
But there are those that you think you got a legitimate chance, and there's also those that you know, man, I've got to pull a rabbit out of a hat here to have a chance to do well. But I had a really good practice in this one area, and I
I told my wife, I said, I think I found an area I can win the Classic in. You know, I had to wait a few weeks to go back. But then when we go back for official practice, we only have one official practice day.
Okay.
And I didn't want, unlike a lot of people, you know, I think once you've got fish located, it's best not to go check them and beat them up, so to speak. So I had one area that I felt like I could win in, and I didn't want to beat them up during our one official practice day right before the tournament started. So I went and fished other stuff all the way up until the last hour of practice. And I said, I got to run in there, make sure I can get in there because, you know, little floating islands and okay. that sort of thing move around in the Delta area down there. I just want to make sure I could get there the next morning when the competition actually began. So I went in there with just enough time to be able to make sure I could get in there and look around just a little bit, not even fish, and then get out. And that's what I did. And the worst thing imaginable, when I could get there, but there were dead fish floating around because it was just really hot, you know,
right.
August, the Louisiana Delta, and, you know, the oxygen in the water was not good, and some fish had died.
Okay.
So I came in and told my wife, I said, you know that place I thought I could win the Classic? And she said, yeah. I said, well, there's a lot of dead fish there. What are you going to do? And then, you know, we just decided I had to go back because it was the only place. And certainly, I mean, we hoped and prayed they didn't all die. And
right.
They didn't. It turned out being obviously a great tournament.
Yeah, yeah. And then 2002, you repeated as the Angler of the Year again. I mean, there haven't been many people that do. First of all, there's only been five people that won the Cup and the Classic. There's a handful of people that won Angler of the Year titles, plural, and you've had a great career since. I mean, you've been kind of a, to my way of thinking, having watched your career, you're kind of a statesman of bass fishing, really.
Well, I certainly appreciate the kind words. You know, just like I mentioned earlier, I'm not a kid anymore. I'm an old man, but I was a kid with a dream. Now I'm an old man with a dream transitioning into something just a little different. But, you know, I've certainly been blessed.
Well, I can't let you go, and I got a couple more little things here, but stuck in the mud at Winya Bay.
Like I mentioned, that's one of those things that happens that can just change your year. You know, if you're trying to win Angler of the Year, if you're trying to make the Classic.
Yeah.
It's better to laugh about it now
right.
than to cry about it. And that's what I did at the time. Instead of crying about it, you know, I made a post on social media.
You did?
And it's the biggest thing I've ever done on social media. I mean, people love to see you win, and they like to see you crash sometimes too, I guess. But it was, you know, I made a turn that a little, not even a shortcut, so to speak, but I made a bad turn, I guess you can say. And it's the only little half-mile stretch I ran the whole week that I hadn't already run and knew really well. But I ran up on a mud flat, and the tide, the wind had pushed the tide out, and instead of it being shallow, it was, I don't want to call it dry mud, but it was visible mud, no water around other than just the moisture in the mud. And, you know, it's like quicksand. I tried to step out of a boat, which I knew better, but I had to try.
I tried
to step out of a boat, and there's just no bottom. So,
yeah.
And it cost me the Classic this year. You know, the worst finish I've ever had in a Bassmaster Elite tournament, and it cost me the Classic. I had to fish in the live well to weigh in to do fairly well.
You know, but if you spend enough time out on the water, something like that's going to happen, you know?
Whether it's
in a tournament. And if you haven't ground up or run aground, you haven't been out there enough.
That's right.
Well, you know, we talked about it earlier. This year, 2016, was your last year out on the water because next year you're taking a step from the boat to the studio. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing going on down the road with bass.
Well, I'm really excited. I've been doing a little thing called First Look on Bassmaster.com at every event and being able to talk to the top guys on the final day right when they come to check in before they go on stage to weigh their fish so they don't know, you know, exactly where they're going to finish. It's just been a fun thing for me to do. I started that 3 years ago, and I never dreamed that I would co-host a show or anything like that, but I guess it led into them offering me a job working in studio with the likes of Tommy Sanders, Mark Zona, and, you know, just great, great folks in the sport. And it's just an awesome way for me to transition. I never wanted to fish tournaments until I was 70 years old or
okay.
you know, 65 years old, anything like that. You know, some guys do, and more power to them. But you wonder, and you have to laugh when people ask you, what are you going to do when you retire from fishing? because most people retire and go fishing more.
Right.
That sort of thing. So it's not an easy transition, and I wanted to transition into something, and this is just a golden opportunity for me to stay involved in the sport, to stay in contact with all those tournaments and with the tournament guys and service crew folks, all the people that have, you know, been a big part of my life for the last 23 years and continue to make a good living and, you know, just hopefully be a positive impact on some young guys. Like I mentioned, it's kids with a dream, and I hope I can continue to be in contact with some of those folks and pay back to the sport.
Yeah, I was a marshal with Skeet Reese back in the 15 Classic on Hartwell, and I think I still got a there's a cold spot there somewhere that pops up every once in a while. It never has warmed up. And you hopped in the boat with him on and did a first look, and I was right there with you. It was a neat little thing you were doing.
It is, like I mentioned, they asked me to do that, and I thought, well, you know, I'll do it. It'll be a good way for me to be able to promote my sponsors, wearing my jersey, my hat, and that sort of thing. And, you know, it just all transitioned into this. It certainly wasn't a plan, but you know, it's worked out, and I couldn't pick a better thing. You know, I've got a couple friends that are about my age that are fishing the Bassmaster Tournament Trail, and they have called to congratulate me and, you know, had personal conversations with them about what they're going to do, you know, as their career comes, you know, winds down. And to be honest with you, none of them had an answer. And I just feel blessed to have this transition where I can continue to be involved with a sport I love and hopefully make a positive impact.
What do you think it's going to be like February next year when you aren't down in the water? You going to have a little bit of a lump in your throat?
Well, that's a big question. I actually did a live well segment with Tommy Sanders on telephone yesterday, and he asked me that. And the first tournament is in Knox, right out of Knoxville, Cherokee Lake,
right.
And it's the 1st of February.
Right.
And I told him that if it's 60 degrees and they're catching those 4-pound smallmouth like I know live there, I'm going to probably have a big lump in my throat. If it's 6 degrees, which it very well could be, and they're having a hard time catching one, I'll probably be glad that I'm in studio with Tommy Sanders and Mark Zona.
Well, I kind of hope it's cold, wet, and rainy so you can just enjoy being in the dry.
You bet.
Well, we mentioned, you know, you've had a great career and all, but you've been a great dad. You got two great sons. I mean, you know, like we mentioned earlier, your first son is oldest son's over in Afghanistan. He's an Army Ranger. I saw where he completed jump school. And frankly, man, I tell you, it's got to take something to jump out of an airplane that's, you know, still going forward, still got the engines running.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I tell a lot of folks that both of my sons take after their mom a lot. They've done really, really good in school. My oldest son, you know, he graduated from the military academy
right.
in West Point, New York.
Yep.
In the top couple, 2 or 3% of his class, you know, coming from a little old town in South Carolina. It's pretty cool. And, you know, my younger son, he was high school valedictorian.
Right.
Straight A's in college. And so but then you wonder about how smart Parker, my oldest son, is, like you said, when you jump out of a perfectly good airplane multiple times.
But that,
and a lot of times, Rangers jump out with about 100 pounds of gear strapped on them, so it makes for a rough landing sometimes. But, you know, I couldn't be any more proud of both of my sons.
And that's just commitment. You know, he believes in what he's doing. That's just commitment. Now, your youngest son, you've had a pretty good year off the water this year because your youngest son plays for Newberry. I think they won their conference title, and they're playing we're recording this on Friday, but I think they're playing for the championship tomorrow, aren't they, Division II?
Yep, they sure are. They had a great year, undefeated in conference, only lost one game. I think that was the first game of the season, non-conference game. But been really, really, really fun to go watch him and the whole Newberry team. It's a great atmosphere, not too far away from my house. And when the game's over, you don't have to get in traffic for 3.5 hours, all that sort of thing. It's a great atmosphere, and it certainly adds a lot to it when you got a son that's on the team. And, you know, real, real proud of him. And, you know, whether it's Newberry College, South Carolina, Clemson, or, you know, any other school that's in this state, those kids, the amount of commitment, the dedication, the hours, you know, my youngest son just said last week, I don't have a life. It's a total commitment to football.
Yeah.
My oldest son is committed to the United States Army, and my youngest one is committed to Newberry College football. But they have to do that to be competitive because other folks are doing that. So it's you know, when you see them, you know, make a mistake out there on Saturday afternoon, and, you know, I'm as guilty as anybody. Sometimes you want to say, you know, what are you thinking? What are you doing? You know, you big dummy. You say that to yourself, but those guys are pouring their hearts out, and they're kids.
Yeah.
Really are. They're big old boys, but they're still young men, and they're going to make mistakes. But I promise you, it's not from the lack of effort. Those guys, they spend a lot of time trying to get ready for Saturday afternoon.
And you know, they grew up their whole life watching you committed to what you do, so they had a good example.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, you know, we appreciate you representing South Carolina all these years in your career. Wish you the best in this new TV gig with Bass. And, you know, it's going to be nice hearing a Southern accent on Bassmaster Live next year.
Well, you know, just real quick.
Yeah.
In the beginning when I was, you know, doing some of the stuff on First Look, people would say, man, you need to try to cover up that Southern accent.
Yes,
and, you know, and I'm like, I'm who I am. And there's a whole lot of Southern people that talk very similar to me that fish for a living. So hopefully they'll accept me for who I am and what I am. So.
Well,
I'm gonna try to be as proper as I can, but I'm not gonna be ashamed of my South Carolina accent.
No, sir, we wouldn't have it any other way, Davey. Well, look, I appreciate you being on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Maybe we can get together and do this again sometime. We're praying for your son as he's over in Afghanistan, and you guys here at home. Hope you get to talk to him. We look forward to him coming home, and we'll see you at least at the Classic next year, if not before.
I sure hope so. Maybe before,
Davey. But anyway, you take care of yourself, and we look forward to it again.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yes, sir, thank you. Well, thanks for tuning in again to Woods and Water, South Carolina. As always, make time to get out there. Be careful when you go. Find the back roads to travel. Wet a line next year. And as always, don't forget that camera. See you next week.